You are listening to the News Project Podcast for the week of August 31st, 2020, brought to you by GNAT TV. This podcast brings you these stories. Retailers ponder the upcoming fall tourist season. The owner of the alpaca guard dog states her position. And a new artist opening in Manchester.
As summer begins its transition into autumn, one of the sectors of Vermont's economy that's being closely watched for signs of stability is the retail sector. Along with the hospitality industry, such as restaurants and lodging establishments, shop owners are a vital piece of the tourism trade that annually shovels about $2.5 billion into the state's economy each year, and tourism as a whole industry employs more than 32,000 Vermonters. After manufacturing, tourism represents the largest contribution of out-of-state money into the state's economy, according to the Vermont State Chamber of Commerce. Store owners have had to navigate the rules on face masks and social distancing in their shops, as well as an unpredictable summer season that's now on the eve of its busiest time of the year, fall foliage. State officials estimate tourism spending is off about 40% from last year, with many surprised that that number wasn't larger. More locally, in Manchester, sales and use tax revenue, which helps power a major share of the town's budget, declined only slightly, down about $15,000 in the second quarter of this year, the period from April to June, compared to that of 2019, dropping from more than $183,000 to slightly under $169,000. So we stopped by and talked with a few local business owners to get their sense of how it was going so far. Most were optimistic the worst was past, and looking ahead with cautious optimism. We first stopped at the Mountain Goat, an outdoor recreation supply store, and spoke with co-owner Ann Hauser.
Well, our wonderful news is that there's a lot of people enjoying the outdoors this summer, and the Mountain Goat is an outdoor shop, so we're happy that that nice combination of events is happening. We are maintaining our space in the shop and really limiting visitors, so depending on how busy it gets, that can be a little awkward, but we will be able to do that and continue to make our business, you know, success. So, and certainly there's so many people looking to get out and play with their families and their new equipment and shoes and, you know, proper gear, etc., is something we can help them with. So we're not unhappy with our business opportunities right now, even though we are a little cautious with the numbers of people that we're going to let in the shop. And you know, we keep our perimeter here, you know, managed so that we all feel safe.
Then we crossed Main Street to chat with Chris Stannard of the specialty food shop Fortuna's.
It's been a challenge. It's been different, but we've become more versatile. We're able to do curbside pickup, where we are allowing customers to come in the store, you know, at a minimal rate. And luckily for us, too, we have mail order that has really been helping us through this pandemic. So it has been a great summer so far. We're very lucky. The traffic in town itself has been great, and we're looking forward to continuing that right through the rest of the summer here. Different world, but we want to make sure we all mask up and stay safe.
And folks have been pretty good about obeying the masks and social distancing and everything?
They really have. We only allow about five people in the store at a time, and people, they'll wait respectfully outside until it's their turn to come in, until somebody else leaves. And people wear masks, 99% of the time, it seems. I have had a couple folks that didn't want to, but with the town making the mandate that they made too, and now the state of Vermont, it's kind of helped us be able to enforce that a little bit easier, especially with the signage around the town here. It's really made our jobs to help enforce this very nice. And we've just added extra sanitizing steps throughout the daily routines that we have. And unfortunately, no samples, but hopefully eventually we'll get back to that at some point. But it's been a learning curve, but I feel we've done well.
Then it was down Depot Street, where we stopped at the Helmholtz Fine Art Gallery and talked to gallery owner Lisa Helmholtz Adams.
Well, like everyone, we are all very much taking everything very carefully, especially with this pandemic. Nobody has been through this, so as a gallery owner, I'm also taking it very carefully. I've been open a couple of days, just on weekends. and just really trying to do my part and also be able to come with the artists and let them enjoy what we're doing. Because the art is very important in order to get away and experience, you know, something different than what we've been dealing with, because so many arts have had to close, which is so sad. And I just, you know, having lived here for the past 30 plus years, I've never been through anything like this, and yet I've been representing artists for 25 years. So this is definitely something new and different. And I just, even with the show coming up this coming week, I'm only open Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, because I really feel that this is how I have to do it, keeping the rules in place, only 25 maximum at a time. And I think, you know, I'm so proud of Vermont. We've done so amazing with staying at the baseline and doing our part. And I think if we all kind of do our part and keep the social distancing, wear our mask, you know, wear the mask and keep that on, that we can get through this. And in the meantime, we're all doing our best, and I think that's all we can do.
Then it was over to Manchester Hot Glass, where we heard from owner Andrew Weil.
You know, it's touch and go. I think everything's fluid, and we're taking it week to week here. How's it going? I lit back up. Well, I guess I shut my furnace off in March and lit back up 3 weeks ago, so we're now, in August? I lit back up because I had a few lighting jobs, and with being open, blowing glass, we've had some customers, and it's, you know, it's interesting. I'm not letting everybody in, and I've got to be selective, and we're making people call first, and we don't want people just coming in to watch us working, because I don't want to be in my studio with the fans running and sucking your breathing into me, you know. So we're a little paranoid. What's my outlook for the future? You know, I always fancied myself a realist. I'm hoping for the best and expecting the worst, and we'll see what happens.
So how was, a big part of your business was people coming in and you giving them lessons on blowing glass and stuff. Has that been affected at all by...
Well, it's been affected tremendously. I did start offering classes again, but again, I'm vetting people, and we've come up with a solution to keep things really clean. We're sterilizing the pipes. And then I've got finger cots that I'm putting on the pipes, and so I hand the clients a finger cot and they put it on and cut the tip a little bit so they can blow into it, so only their mouth is going on it, and then they remove it and throw it away. But I'm selective. I'm not just letting people walk in and do that. I'm vetting people and making sure that they've been wearing masks and staying away from people. People that are like, we've been out having a good time and partying. No, I don't even want you in my shop. You know, it's how I've handled it.
For the bigger countywide picture, we touched base with Matt Harrington, the executive director of the Southwestern Vermont Regional Chamber of Commerce, which covers all of Bennington County.
We're all kind of watching with bated breath to see how the tourism industry either happens or doesn't this fall. And I think there's probably some fear and uncertainty that if it happens at all, it's going to be severely less than what we've experienced in the past. So I think the word that I keep coming back to with retailers or any of our business members is anxious and really not knowing. We're probably far away from any real return to normalcy, and our retailers are experiencing some of that, not severely as other industries like lodging, but restaurants and retail have really had to transform and do more online ordering and pick up, and I think our communities are responding. I think they're ordering more locally, which is great. We've heard that local sales have been up, but I think there's still some fear that won't offset the fact that there won't be as many travelers this summer and fall. What we do know is, and this statistic is better than I've seen in the past 5 years that I've been with the Chamber, but when we did our State of the Commerce survey this summer, it looks like 63% of our retailers have online presence. I mean, you can go to their website and you can purchase a product, and that product can either be picked up at the store or shipped to you. And that's about 63% of our membership, which in a rural community is better than I've seen in the past. When asked, did they start the online experience because of COVID? Not as big of a response. About 17% said yes, I've started an online commerce store because of COVID, which again, we'll take anything at this time. So I'm proud of those members that saw what was happening and made a pivot to online. What we do know, and what I think this chamber and others have to focus on, is that e-commerce, which we kind of already know, is here to stay. It is only growing, but COVID has kind of hijacked that timeline. So if you are a small rural storefront in Vermont, you might have had a couple more years to catch up. You don't anymore. And so we need to find ways as a chamber, as a community, as retailers, as a state, to assist those storefronts that will have to hop online or probably no longer exist. That's just
with travel restrictions still in place and limiting where people can come from to visit Vermont, along with all the other uncertainties that involve the COVID-19 pandemic, it will be a different foliage season than any in recent memory. For the GNET TV News Project, I'm Andrew McKeever.
According to the Select Board's new rules of procedure, which we voted to approve at our last meeting, you are allotted 3 minutes to say your piece.
Okay, then I need to reevaluate what I was going to say, because I think I had more than that. I was a little disconcerted upon seeing the last meeting and hearing afterwards that I was the subject of discussion without having been given a chance to respond. But I mainly wanted to present my side for the record as well. I shall try and get down to the most important parts of it. I had a number of things because there were a lot of exaggeration, speculation, and misstatements that I was going to correct, but that would run me over my time. So I shall jump straight to the important stuff. As Mr. O'Keefe has said, I checked with the Agency of Agriculture, and I do qualify, despite the fact that I am not a big commercial farm, and I never intended to be a big commercial farm. Small family farms do count, and I am a farm. As for the situation with the dog, there were two things. There was a complaint that the dog was barking too much. At the time when I wrote the letter where I tried to reach out to my neighbors to give them my information, start a dialogue going, and which I was very much cut off by Mr. Foster, who refused to hear any solution other than getting rid of the dog and wouldn't even discuss other options. I actually had great sympathy for them because I believed my dog probably was barking, even though I never heard her and several other neighbors said they never heard her, because livestock guardian dogs can bark. This concerned me because a well-trained one is only going to bark when there are predators present and is not going to be barking extensively at great length all night. So I didn't know whether she was not as well-trained as I was under the impression, or whether she was too nervous or overreactive. So I began first opening my windows and turning off my fan so I could hear her at night, and I wasn't hearing anything. So I acquired an audio recording device, and for the past 12 nights, I have left it running outside all night long, every night. And the next day I go through and I actually find every barking incident and I time it and I put it on a spreadsheet. And the upshot is, pardon?
Nothing, that's amazing.
The upshot is I don't see where the problem is. If there's a way for me to upload a PDF, I can show you the spreadsheet. If not, I can summarize it for you. But of the 12 nights that I have recorded, on 7 of those nights, there were either 0 or 1 incident of barking all under 1 minute. On 3 of those.
I just want to mention that we just blew past 3 minutes. I'm going to allow you to continue, but if you could please keep it as brief as possible.
I will. I'm trying to sum this up as fast as I can. I'm reevaluating on the fly. There were 3 nights with 2 to 4 incidents of barking, also mostly under a minute. There were only 2 nights where there was significant barking. One of those nights in particular, I know that we had a lot of predators that night because you could clearly hear coyotes on the recordings. And also we had evidence of bear activity the next morning. On the worst of those nights, the barking was still a total of no more than 15 minutes, total. There is never a single incident of anything 20 minutes or longer. The longest single incident was 5 minutes, and that was the longest all week. The average over the week is less than a minute per incident, with a total of 2 minutes and 49 seconds a night on average, which hardly seems to be nuisance standard to me. I don't know whether I am being blamed for every dog that they hear anywhere in the neighborhood. I have heard other dogs in the neighborhood, but I have other neighbors who can confirm that my dog is not being a problematic barking. My recordings, which I have kept, confirm that I am not a problematic barker. Mr. Salo came out and met my dog 2 weeks ago and could probably confirm that she was extremely well behaved and very quiet. And I will also, the one legitimate concern for a while is that she was getting out when she is frightened, which is true. We have continued to work on that, not only improving the fence, I have gotten a tracker. And in the last 10 days, anytime she's gotten out, there have been 3 times she got out and we got her back always within 5 minutes. And there was a concern that she might be dangerous. This is definitely not true, let me assure you. There are livestock guardian dogs. The brochure they received that said don't approach them without the owner was a standard one for livestock guardian dogs, and some are aggressive towards people. Mine is not. I've never heard her even growl at anybody, much less bark at anybody. There are 3 children living on my property, less than 7 years old, who adore her and play with her and love her, and she looks after them. I would like to do anything I can to make things better because I don't like having stress in the neighborhood. But honestly, at this point, I don't see what I am doing that is a problem. So,
well,
that's the important part.
I would say that because you have gotten your farm designation and you've registered the dog as a farm animal, a farm guard animal, as I understand it, there's really not much the select board can do statutorily about that. And at this point, it's going to be you and your neighbors working out a solution.
I understand that, but I didn't wish to have sitting on the record a place where I was talked about in a pejorative fashion extensively and not at least put my response.
Understood.
Yeah, I want it on the record.
Reading through the designation, the farm designation from the Agriculture Department, under, I think it's section 3.1, you qualify. Mm-hmm. But the list under section 3.1 says that it would be 3 camelids, and my understanding is you only have 2 alpacas.
I have 2 alpacas at this point. I am planning to get a 3rd, but according to my conversation with the Department of Agriculture, because I was actually expecting to have to either wait until I had more livestock or to have to file a business plan with them, which was another thing they had said. And I was actually informed by the Department of Agriculture, and then later saw it somewhere in the statutes, that simply by having more than 4 acres of land, which are being utilized for agricultural activities, qualifies me as a farm without any of that other. Small family farm is recognized by the state of Vermont.
Well, there we have it. I appreciate your taking the time to speak with us, West, and I hope that you and your neighbors can come to some resolution.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Thanks. Thank you for your preparation.
I believe in data. So.
Well, good for you. Oh, yeah, that's impressive.
Despite the fact that under the law, even if she was barking a lot, she would theoretically be covered by the fact that we're qualified as a form. The fact is, I don't wish to be an annoying neighbor. That's not my intent in this case. I do find myself, you know, very much glad to have a dog to guard my livestock as I increase them. As a responsible, you know, livestock owner, I wish them to be protected. But, you know, if my dog had been excessively barking, I would have been taking steps to remedially train her to try and calm her down to just doing it when necessary. The fact is, she's already only doing it when necessary.
It's also my understanding that, you know, being officially a farm requires adherence to the required agricultural practices and regulations.
Yes.
So just my main concern with that is giving proximity to the West River. I just want to make sure that there's an actual runoff collection system that you have or a plan in place for that. So I guess looking forward to seeing some sort of a site plan to review in the future as the farm continues to grow.
Certainly.
Man-Made Mother Earth is the title of the exhibit created by Londonderry-based artist Stefania Urist, which uses glass and wood primarily to examine and illustrate how people and the natural world, expressed mainly through trees she has gathered, are intertwined. The exhibit is on display at the Helmholtz Fine Art Gallery in Manchester. Planes of glass inserted into the trees she has harvested are one unusual element of the sculptures. Another sculpture has a tree growing through a window, forming a contrast with the transparency of the glass and the winding, natural, enduring shape of the tree. We had a chance to discuss the exhibit with the artist, who explained the progression of her artwork to this point.
Sure. So when you walk into the gallery, I have a couple freestanding pieces, and then a couple wall pieces, and then a couple prints. I work with a variety of different materials based on what concept I'm trying to get across with my work. And so this whole show explores the connection between humans and nature. So I use glass, metal, and wood primarily to address those ideas. And so I have some freestanding trees that have glass inserted into them that catch the light in different ways. And so those are very subtle in the middle of the gallery. And as you walk around them, the glass will catch the light and they'll kind of shine and you'll see what I'm talking about. And then I have other pieces that are leaded glass, tree stumps, logs, and tree cookies. And there are a couple on the back wall. There are three that are kind of the showcase pieces, and then two that are on pedestals. And then interspersed in between all of those, I have these mono prints that I have made that are of, that I take from actual trees that are tree sap and graphite, that I think of as like taking the fingerprint of a tree. So those are interspersed between all my sculpture. Well, like all artists, it is a progression. One work builds into another, and there is, even if it's not obvious to the viewer, to me, the progression from one piece to another has a clear thread. But definitely moving to Vermont, obviously, was a huge inspiration with the woods and being surrounded by nature. And in contrast to my previous experiences of living in cities and thinking about architecture, and so it's sort of coming from personal experience, but also from nature and humanity at large, that humans are really connected to nature and architecture is connected to nature. And even though there's kind of these disparate categories, I think of them all as much more intertwined. And so the progression of my work went from more looking at the human body to looking at trees and sort of anthropomorphizing them, but also seeing ourselves in them and sort of abstracting the human form a little bit more.
Interesting. What's the biggest technical challenge to making sculptures like that? Is it inserting the glass into them, or finding the right tree, or what's the hardest part of this whole experience?
The hardest part is probably that every piece I make is 100% unique. And so I have technical challenges with every single work I make. And glass is obviously inherently fragile and brittle, and it's very strong in a lot of ways if you handle it correctly, but, it can also be, it also breaks because it's 100% inelastic. It doesn't bend, if it wants to bend, then it breaks. So, working with glass can be extremely frustrating. I break things all the time, but it also, big risk, big reward. I think once I make something that works and I figure out how to do it, and I like the challenge of it, then once I figure it out and put it all together and it's cohesive, then it makes me happy. So, but yeah, working with glass is challenging. And then combining materials is also hard. Combining wood that flexes, that expands and contracts with moisture and heat, and then glass does not, that's a challenge. Also, I cut myself quite frequently with glass, so, and burn myself because I use solder, so those are all daily challenges, but that's part of the fun of it for me. I kind of want to highlight different materials and different aspects of nature and kind of remind people that it's here and it's beautiful.
Stefania Jurist's exhibit will be on display at the Helmholtz Gallery until Friday, September 4th. For more information, call the Helmholtz Gallery at 802-855-1678 or visit their website at helmholtzfineart.com. For the GNAT TV News Project, I'm Andrew McKeever.
Thanks for listening local. For more local content, visit GNAT.tv.